Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning, friends. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. It is Tuesday, May 16. It's already the middle of the month. And if you are wondering what's coming up next, it's Memorial Weekend already in a couple of weeks. Yikes. That means the summer is upon us. And summer always means road construction. And there's going to be lots of projects in my neck of the woods. I know there's a project underway not too far from my house that apparently the project is a $4 million project. And they've so far, I believe, have spent $3 million on orange barrels. That's all I see are orange barrels. Anyway, I want to go back to a piece of comforting wisdom that comes from Romans. It says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. And God the Father is just absolutely relentlessly pursuing us all the time. And he wants to bring comfort to us. In John 15, verse 26, in the Living Bible, it says, I will send you the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, the source of all truth. He will come to you from the Father and will tell you all about me. So the Holy Spirit's going to come inform you, comfort you, guide you, teach you. How cool is that? And a great quote from Jerry Bridges, an author who wrote a book called Trusting God. He said, God's unfailing love for us is an objective fact affirmed over and over in the Scriptures. It is true whether we believe it or not. Our doubts do not destroy God's love, nor does our faith create it. It originates in the very nature of God, who is love, and it flows to us through our union with his beloved Son. How awesome is that? All right, here's a news story out of Iowa. Meals being served once again at Timothy's House of Hope. Meals are being served to the homeless. The service began again yesterday after a week-long conflict with the city over zoning issues that ended up stalling service. Oh, I hate when government interferes with just helping people eat. And this is interesting. The airport in Kentucky are trying to relieve travelers' stress with mini horses. They've got miniature horses in the airport. If you want to relieve stress, how about on-time departures? That would actually be better.
They can't guarantee that, but they can give you a mini horse.
They actually can guarantee the mini horse, which is just fine for me. And today is National Love a Tree Day. So there you go. Go hug a tree.
Not going to do that.
I'm not either.
Thank you.
Trust
Mostly
me.
Because it's been raining all day,
yes.
all morning already. So
yes,
that's
I'm not hugging no tree today. All right. Good English, Bill. All right. When we come back, Dr. David Stevens, he's already on the studio line, and we're going to chat with him about a number of medical and dental related issues. And if you've got a question for Dr. Stevens, do call 1-877-933-2484. 1-877-93-FAITH. You can ask a question or you can email me the question, which would be bill@myfaithradio.com. And I'll just ask Dr. Stevens the question on your behalf without you having to come on the air. Okay? And then we've got Dottie Lewis coming up in the second part of this hour. We've got several books to give away, and you're going to want to get your hands on one of these books because it's great. And tell me the name of the book again, Rebecca.
It's called Among Wolves, Disciple Making in the City.
Disciple Making in the City, Among Wolves. That's going to be a great conversation we're going to have with Dottie Lewis in just a little bit. So it is 7 minutes after the hour. Thanks for listening today. We just love having you. And whether you're on your way to work or getting ready, just know that you're just so loved and that we want to always encourage you and remind you that hope is what God gives and he's there for you, even if it doesn't feel like he is sometimes. Because you feel beat up, right? You feel like a little bit beat up, but he's there. He cares. He loves you. Be back in a minute. It is 9 minutes after the hour. I love Dr. David Stevens because he has wisdom all over the place. And he is on the studio line right now. We're going to talk to him about a number of health-related issues. David, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So appreciate you coming on the show. Always look forward to our conversations because I learn so much from you.
Well, there's a lot out there happening in healthcare and in bioethics, and there's always something to talk about.
Oh, no kidding.
Every time we get together.
Yeah. So when we talk about Obamacare and the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, I know we're still early in the process, and there's a lot of work that has to be done. But I think the first topic was really focused on rolling back Obamacare's Medicaid expansion, which was basically giving insurance cards to 11 million able-bodied adults without kids. And that was at a cost of about $64 billion without really actually improving any healthcare outcomes.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern about that. And the fact that, in the new American Healthcare Act, they deal somewhat with that, saying that if you're not disabled, if you're not too elderly, et cetera, you have to be working to get Medicaid benefits. In other words, creating an inducement, not just to sit at home and be unemployed, but if you want Medicaid and you're capable of working, then you have to work to do that. Because the other option just created a situation where people were stuck in poverty. And also they had a what we call a coverage gap in that. In other words, if you are unemployed on Medicaid and you get an offer for a low-paying job, I mean, it's not a high-paying job, but maybe it's going to create some income, there's an inducement not to take it because if you get enough income, you no longer qualify for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to work full-time or I'm not going to work at all so I can get my Medicaid benefits, and they're trying to do away with that so that, create an inducement for people to work and not just stay in poverty for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, not to mention be happier, too. If they can work and if they're able-bodied, work is good.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen that with aid for dependent children, what it's done to marriage in the sense that the more children a single woman has, they get more benefits. But if they get married, they lose them. So I won't get married. I'll just live with a guy and have more kids and get more money. And so we've got all these perverse inducements in our program here in the United States trying to help the poor, which actually makes the situation worse. And we need to deal with those issues while still helping those truly in need.
Yeah. Dr. Stevens, what are the conservatives in Washington? What are their priorities when it comes to the Medicaid reform?
Well, I think they're trying to create a way to get people out of poverty and not perpetuate it in the sense of creating inducements not to be gainfully employed, not to be married, instability of the family. We know when fathers are not at home, the effect that has especially on the sons, and they're more likely to be in crime, more likely to be in prison, all sorts of things without a father in the home. So a lot of things that we look at in our culture, in the midst of trying to do some good, have actually caused significant problems, especially in those in poverty. And then we look at the whole, Affordable Care Act and the fact that it's going bankrupt. That's not really a surprise, Bill, because we created a huge amount of extra benefits. I think they sweetened the pot to try to get this through. We're going to do all these things. And obviously, $2 trillion more over 10 years in cost. And we're already seeing health insurance companies getting out of it. They can't even, keep solvent with this plan. And so it's a real mess. So now we're looking at the whole healthcare issue, not just Medicaid. That's one part of it. But what do we do next? Because the Affordable Care Act is unsustainable and it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm. David, when we talk about insurance, I've always had an idea or an understanding of what the word insurance means. So let's talk about the perspective of covering pre-existing conditions. I mean, I'm okay if we call it healthcare, but if we call it insurance, don't you have to sort of buy insurance in the event that something might happen?
Yeah, and there are actually inducements in the American Healthcare Act, which was passed through Congress, to encourage people to keep insured. And it's a very complex program. In fact, I pulled up a summary of it, and there were 92 bullet points. I go, whoa, I mean, I'm in healthcare, and I'm having trouble understanding all this. But one of the inducements in there is that if you go without insurance for 63 days, then you have higher costs getting back into it. In other words, an inducement to try to have people continue to be insurance. But one of the things that's happening in all this and a lot of discussions, you know, once you have entitlements of any type, can you imagine if the government said we're going to roll back Medicare and do away with it or severely modify it, the impact that would have on the elderly and their mm-hmm. concerns? Well, now that we've had the Obamacare Act, it's come pretty acceptable that we need some sort of health care coverage provided for everyone, universal. And as Congress is looking at this issue and trying to get something more workable in place, they're working on the assumption that we're going to have universal coverage for catastrophic situations. President Trump has said that. Others in Congress have said that. I think we've crossed that line, and the government is likely to be involved with some sort of universal catastrophic coverage, at least to cover Americans. And there's some very positive sides to that and maybe some ways that we can get to it without bankrupting the country. Mm-hmm. Right now, the way we supplement people's health insurance as the government is that we don't charge them tax if they work and have a health insurance plan. And our health insurance plan for a family costs our organization $18,000 a year. So that's about $4,000, $4,500 maybe of taxes people don't have to pay. They get that benefit, but they don't pay taxes on it. So people are saying maybe we can put in a catastrophic coverage program and do away with the tax deduction for employees. In fact, take away, essentially induce employers not to give you insurance, health care insurance, and there'll be a universal program that the government does for catastrophic, not I've got to go and have a checkup, but those huge expenses that come on, and people don't understand how high they are until they get into them. My sister-in-law just had a hysterectomy, and we were with her last week, and she said we got the bill and about fell over $68,000
wow.
for a hysterectomy. Now, they ended up paying $54 because they had insurance. But that was the bill from the hospital. And so catastrophic doesn't mean I was in a massive car accident in the hospital for months. Catastrophic can be fairly simple things because they're so expensive.
Yeah. Well, David, we're going to take a little break. I've got many more questions coming up. It is 17 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And we'll be right back. It is 19 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Dr. David Stevens. And, David, I got a little bit stuck on your story of your sister-in-law, $64,000 for a hysterectomy. I'm trying to think if I took my car into my mechanic and I said I just need my tires rotated, and he said that'd be $3,800, I'd be going, huh, wait a minute, something doesn't seem right here. I mean, how long does a hysterectomy procedure generally take? Is it a couple hours?
It doesn't. No, it wouldn't even take that long. And this was done robotically, which makes it more expensive. But,
okay.
You're out of the hospital more quickly. But, you know, that was the sticker price. What happens is if you have insurance, the insurance company has had a relationship with whatever entity that does this, and they pay less. So if you don't have insurance, you're paying $68,000. She had insurance, and I suspect the insurance company paid probably around
$20,000. Okay.
So you can see how that actually preys on the poor and the uninsured. They get the huge ticket price, but the insurance company actually has reduced rates that they've bargained with the healthcare entity.
Why are they messing with their minds?
It's a crazy system. We need to simplify. And the biggest problem in healthcare is it costs too much, and it's on an uncontrollable curve, and we're spending 18, 19, close to 20% of our gross national product on healthcare insurance. Singapore, for example, spends 5% on healthcare and provides universal coverage for their people. We've got a system that is broken and not working. You know, let's get into this universal catastrophic coverage that people are talking about. What they're saying is that there would be a deductible based on your income. So if you make $1 million a year, it'd be 20% of your income maximum that you'd have to pay out of pocket, and they could afford it. They're making $1 million, or 10% per person that has a catastrophic situation. And so if you're making $100,000, it would be less than that. And then you could buy a supplemental insurance plan like you do for Medicare mm-hmm. to cover that gap, and then combine that with a healthcare savings account. And essentially the worst thing is some major issue that comes on, a car accident, cancer, whatever. That's what we do with our car. We don't have insurance that pays for our oil changes and our gas and our, you know, tune-up. We have it in case we have a crash and destroy the car. Why don't we approach healthcare insurance that way, covering catastrophic situations, which those are the most common cause of bankruptcy in the United States, is healthcare costs in a catastrophic situation, and then have other things to supplement. This would all be done through the market, through insurance companies, but tax credits and things like that would be used, and we would probably end up with about half the cost that we're now projecting for the Affordable Care Act, and it would also cover young people. So I think there's some things to look at here. I'd like to see the numbers in more detail, but they're saying with this, about $2,000 per individual, $4,000 to $7,000 per family, depending on your size, can be covered, and that would be paid back by the fact that there wouldn't be a deduction for health care insurance on taxes, and we would end up better, and employers would get out of the insurance business, which I would be anxious to get out of.
Yeah. David, I think you should be president of the United States. This is my guess. Okay, I've got a caller. Jason is calling from Madison from Faith 104.7. He has a question about catastrophic care. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Bill. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Families are looking to get out of the healthcare business as well. That's what my question is. Between our premiums and our potential deductible, we could pay up to $15,000 a year right now. And, you know, we have a family of six. We don't go to the doctor unless it's necessary mm-hmm. because of the cost. But my question is, can we buy a catastrophic plan right now and dump our health insurance and pay cash for the regular, you know, normal doctor visits?
Yeah, great question, Jason.
You can, and you know, what insurance companies are concerned about is those large bills. Now, if the government jumped into it through this program, that takes away their risk, and premiums will go down for those supplemental plans. But we have a catastrophic thing right here at CMDA right now, and it kicks in at expenses over $12,000. We have a healthcare savings account, and we give $4,000 a year, and so there's a gap. But over 2 or 3 years, you do away with that. And so it gives good protection. You can buy catastrophic policies, and that will lower your premiums significantly. And then a healthcare savings account, if you can do that, you can give pre-tax money into that and can be used for healthcare expenses for routine things. And I think it's a great system, and it still gives you that inducement to only go to the doctor when you really need it, and go to urgent care or your private doctor instead of the emergency room where it's going to cost you 10 times as much to get, you know, something treated. So, yeah, you can move that direction. I encourage you to do it because it's expensive. And I know for us, Jason and Bill, is, you know, we're getting 20 to 25% increase in premiums for organization each year. It's unsustainable. I mean, we got people that are making $30,000 and we're paying $18,000 on top of that for their health insurance coverage.
Jason, I sure appreciate the call. I hope the good doctor gave you some advice you can act on.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Love the show, Bill. Thanks for being on the show. So, David, we just have less than a minute left. I appreciate your counsel to Jason in Madison. And as we're just sort of wrapping up, the new Miss USA said health care for all Americans is a privilege, not a right. She took some backlash there.
Yeah, she did. And I think in this country, after what happened with the Affordable Care Act, more and more people think it is a right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think politicians are afraid of stepping back from that, at least in the area of catastrophic. And I think there's some solutions out there. I've not been, you know, universal coverage, but I'm seeing some light. And we've gotten ourselves such in a corner, we're going to have to do something to get out of it. And some of the things on the table look interesting. You got to see the numbers, but maybe we can get our mess cleaned up and get people with health care coverage without bankrupting our country or our families.
Mm-hmm. David, it's always a pleasure. I so look forward to our conversations, and thank you for talking to Jason and being so wise with him, and thanks for being on the show.
It's great to be with you, Bill. God bless.
Thanks, David. All right, it's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break, and Dottie Lewis is coming up next after news and some other stuff, but we've got a great second half of this hour coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. 29 minutes until the top of the hour, and it is Tuesday, May 16th, and it's a wet one out there in this neck of the woods. Well, it's not raining right now, but there's more coming, so make sure you grab an umbrella today or your yellow slicker. Remember yellow slickers? I think I still have one. Be back in just a minute. Twenty-five till the top of the hour. Christians need to have a solid, secure understanding of their faith in an ever-changing world. Ann Graham Lotz speaks to this.
We need to know what we believe. We need to know why we believe it. We need to be rooted in God's Word. We need to not only establish a personal, permanent love relationship with God through faith in Jesus, but we need to develop it until it's the core of our lives, until that's our heartbeat. Because that's the only thing that's going to carry us through some of this that's coming, and it's going to get worse. I think persecution is coming. I think ISIS may come. I think we're looking at maybe an economic collapse this year. Jonathan Kahn, Rabbi Kahn, is predicting there'll be an economic collapse, he thinks, by September 13th. Joel Rosenberg is on a book tour right now with his book, The Third Target, that talks about just what happens if ISIS wins. He paints a scenario if ISIS is not defeated. And there are things that God is warning us, and he's laying out the signs, and God's people, I think some of us are so afraid we're in denial. Others of us are just so complacent and apathetic because we've got so many responsibilities of life, and the devil will make sure that we're so busy, and have so many things coming at us that we can't see the big picture. So we're living in a very dangerous time, but a very strategic time from God's perspective, and a time when it's of the essence that we are alert, we're in prayer, and we can seize those opportunities to share the gospel, to encourage somebody in their faith, to stand strong.
That interview is on our website, myfaithradio.com. Just search Ann Graham Lotz, and there it will be. Dahati Lewis is my guest coming up. We're going to take a short break and talk to him next.
As a parent, how do you know exactly the right time to extend grace? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I recently worked with a teen who rarely received grace at home. He spewed anger on everyone and everything around him, including the side of my van. But instead of having him arrested for bashing my vehicle with a baseball bat, I told him that he was forgiven, that he wouldn't be arrested, and that we were going to work things out differently from now on. As we talked, I saw tears come to his eyes. He had never experienced this kind of forgiveness. And giving him grace at just the right moment went a long way to change the direction he was headed. Giving grace is most often needed the moment when it's least deserved.
Find more parenting help from Mark Gregston when you go online to parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's 20 minutes till the top of the hour. Dahati Lewis is the lead pastor of Blueprint Church in Atlanta, Georgia, and he serves as the director of the Send Network team at North American Mission Board. He is passionate about disciple making, so I love this guy already. And with a name like Dahati Lewis, I would assume that's standard spelling, L-E-W-I-S, is that right?
L-E-W-I-S, yes, sir.
Dahati, how many times have you had to spell that name for people?
Oh, Dahati, that's common. I've been called everything and anything. So I just learned to answer to anything that remotely sounds
I bet.
Close to that.
I bet. Now, you are married to Angie, and you've got 7 kids, so you've got a lot going on. And I want to hear a little bit of your story. Tell our listeners a little bit of your journey.
Yeah, I mean, I was born to both Reggie and Donna Lewis, and I was born, my dad played pro football, so pretty much my life was grown up around sports, football. Football was my God. Everything I did and didn't do was because of sports. And basically God used that to bring me to himself because I didn't get a scholarship to a major Division I school. And then I just started searching. I started studying Hinduism, Nation of Islam, I mean, all the different religions. But it was really with a passion to realize that, man, there has to be more than life than just sports. Eventually, God brought me to himself, through the personal work of Christ. Came to know the Lord my sophomore year in college.
And then it was at that point that I realized that there was so much I needed to learn because I wasn't raised in the church. So stories like David and Goliath and Samson and Delilah, I was like, I heard these stories and I was like, who are these people? And I would start having to kind of study to catch up. And mm-hmm. it was in these studies that I started hearing things about evangelism and discipleship. And it was really there that I started finding, oh, God is calling us to do things. Because what I learned was that a lot of times people had more of an anti-vision of Christianity than a vision. You know, mm-hmm. Christianity was about what you don't do. You don't go to the club. You don't drink. You don't have sex outside of marriage. You don't join a fraternity and sorority. All the don't do's. Mm-hmm. But now God was calling us actually to do something. And it was just, that's what captured my heart. And that's why disciple making became the very thing. And I tell people all the time as a pastor of the church is that my call to the pastorate wasn't a call so I can preach. It was a call to make disciples, you know, and I saw that the church was God's primary vehicle in order to make disciples. But many of us didn't have a category for what does discipleship look like in the local church. And so that's really been my passion and my driving my story and really kind of what has shaped my ministry over the years.
Now, Dahadi, I know you addressed this in your book, and the book is called Among Wolves, Disciple Making in the City. And we've actually got several copies here that we can give away to listeners. So if you have a call, a question for Dahadi, you can give us a call at 1-877-933-2484, or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and we'll put your name in the drawing to win one of these books. I guess one of the big questions, Dahadi, is how do we turn passive participants into active disciple makers in this world that we live in today?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that a lot of times in, you know, at the church, in church service, you hear pastors oftentimes talking about, you know, trying to get them from a consumer mindset, trying to get this into active and about our faith. And so we talk about it a lot, but if we really look at our environments, most of our environments that we create in the church context are created in a way where you have one active participant and a bunch of passive listeners. So on Sunday services, we have one person, or we have a worship leader, we have the band, we have whoever's preaching the word for the pastor who's preaching, and then you have a bunch of people who are listening. Right. And then we said, OK, well, we need to take it to our homes. And what do? It's the same thing. We have one person, a Bible study leader, our facilitator who prepares all week. And then we have a bunch of passive people that are kind of engaging. They may answer a couple of more questions, but it's still more passive. And then when we said, well, we want to reach our neighborhood or whatever. And what do? We start Bible studies where we're still promoting one person active, a bunch of passive people. And I really think that if we want to change the culture, we have to change the way we go about doing things in it and really turn people to active participants. And so that's what you see throughout the book of Matthew is that Jesus, his call to his disciples were follow me and I will make you become fishers of men. Mm. So in that you hear both an invitation into relationship, but also a challenging them to change. You know, and that change was to engage in the work of God. And I think a lot of times you've heard that the way you catch him is the way you're going to keep him. So we have to, in the same way Christ called his people, we have to call people to service, call people to laboring, call people to the harvest, you know, because that's what Jesus was saying in Matthew chapter 9. He says the harvest is plentiful, but it's the laborers that are a few. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think the problem is that we have reduced our Christianity to conferences, church services, and concerts. And we just really have to kind of start beginning to look at how does our faith walk express itself outside of these kind of environments.
Okay, Dahadi, you've said a lot of really great things. So let me backtrack just a little bit. I know the aim of your book is to try to be gospel-centered. You want to get local church-based people getting equipped to become disciples who are going to go out in the urban areas and share their faith. Now, there has to be some equipping on behalf of these saints to go do this work. And how do we get them in a disciplined way to pursue holiness, to be more equipped to do this work?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing that we have to see the local church as the primary tool for disciple making. For example, every membership, we do membership here every 2 months at Blueprint Church in Atlanta. And every membership, I'll stand before those that are becoming, wanting to become members, and we tell them that a call to membership here at this church is a call to discipleship. And our goal is that we want every single covenant member to be discipled. And because, and I talk about them in the same way that as a church, we take on the same responsibility that if you were to come ask me personally, Dahati, will you disciple me? That I would say, I would take it into consideration whether or not I have the time, the ability, that, you know, in order to do that. And I think the church needs to take on that same mindset, you know, as we are making disciples. At Blueprint Church, we have 276 or 79 now covenant members in, and our goal is not to disciple 100 of them. Our goal is to disciple 279 of them because, you know, like I said, married with 7 kids. If I were to say, hey, I'm discipling 4 out of my 7 kids, would you be impressed?
No.
You know, if I were to say 5 out of the 7 kids, no.
No, keep
6
pushing
out of
it.
The 7, yeah, but only 7 out of 7. But for some reason, when we talk about the church, we don't have that same mentality. We are comfortable with 60% or 50%. So our goal is every covenant member. And so we have clear aims that we want each one of our covenant members to embody in order to do that. And so in the same way, we need, that's how you are able to take a person from a passive participant to an active disciple maker.
Okay, Dahati, we're going to take a little break when we come back. Lots more about your book, Among Wolves, Disciple Making in the City. If you'd like to win one of these books, you want to email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, or give us a call, 1-877-933-2484, and we'll put your name in the drawing to win one. Be back in a minute. Hey! 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here talking to Dahati Lewis. He's very passionate about making disciples, so he's a guy I like already. And Dahati, I've got a caller on the line. Sherry from Cottage Grove has called in with a question. Sherry, hello, how are you?
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for this topic. Our pastor, I would love to get this book for our pastor. He just last week, he spent the whole hour just preaching his heart out on this very subject that God gave us all at least one talent or gift, and that we cannot just come and be passive listeners, you know, that this is so important. This is so important to the church, the growth of the church.
Yeah, well, Sherry, I appreciate your comment. Stay on the line. We'll try to get you, we'll get you in the drawing for the book. Dahati, this is certainly striking a chord. There's a sense of urgency that we have to make disciples, because if we're not developing fully devoted followers of Christ, church is in trouble.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And one of the things that I would just kind of add in that is that we have, a lot of times we have reduced discipleship to mentorship in this kind of a one-on-one or one-on-three category. But a lot of...
I think we lost him. Now I think we lost Dahati, but that's, we might get him back. Very... important topic on disciple making, so we definitely want to get back to him. We're going to try calling him again. I think he's back. There we go. Dahati, I think we just lost you there for a brief minute. I hope you're back. There,
yes.
You're back.
I am here, yes. I'm sorry.
No problem. You have 7
kids. What I was saying was that a lot of times we have reduced disciple making or life-on-life discipleship to a once-a-week meeting kind of at Starbucks when I'm going to ask you about your life. And I really think the essentials of disciple-making is a life-on-life component where we're, what I was saying earlier, inviting people into relationship and challenging them to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the basic mechanics that any of us as disciple-makers can do. And so when we – because a lot of times when people think about disciple-making, they think, well, I got to go to seminary, or I have to be trained, or I have to – you know, and I need some type of major kind of theological degree in order to be disciple or to be a disciple-maker. And I think we just have to understand that in that call to the disciples, Jesus says, follow me. That's an invitation into relationship. and I will make you fishers of men. There's that this relationship is going to challenge you to change. And a lot of times we'll fall on one or the other side. We're just kind of all invitation. We're all kind of relational without challenge, or we're all challenge without invitation to relationship. And so we just have to balance that tension between the two.
Mm-hmm. Dahati, you say in your book that, discipleship is what God calls us to do, but it's also kind of a tall order, because Jesus says in Matthew, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." And you say to be as wise as serpents is to have a good capacity to understand circumstances. It's to be a little cunning, isn't it? Jesus is basically telling the sheep to have a little street sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the tension. I mean, especially in an urban context or in cities across the country and in our days, because we are to go out armed with the gospel, but we are to understand that we have the ministry of reconciliation. We're armed with love, you know, and so as we're wrestling with those tensions, that's why Jesus says, "I'm sending you as sheep, but in the midst of wolves."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a dynamic that is only through the power of the Holy Spirit that we're able to kind of navigate in that world. And so part of our responsibility as believers is to constantly abide in the Spirit.
Yes.
And allow the Spirit to guide us in that.
Okay, Dahati, let me ask you this. If you're going to be doing this, and I hope you are, we need to get ready for persecution, don't we?
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's almost kind of, you know, it's one of those things that you know is going to happen. It's not if you're going to be persecuted, it's when you're going to be persecuted.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times in our disciple making, we think our goal is to avoid persecution. And that's really not our goal. Our goal is to make disciples. It's our commission for us to do. And when we do that, we are to expect it, because it is one of those things that people don't like, that type of intensity. It's kind of, we like the relativism that we have, the live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
And don't put your beliefs on me. Don't put your
right.
moral, don't put your God on me. And I think that that's something that as believers, that's the very commission that we've called to do. So it's expect persecution.
So also be ready to be called names, to be reduced down to expressions like, hey, you're a homophobe, you're a sexist, you're a bigot. Just get ready for that stuff. It's going to come.
Yeah. I mean, anything and everything is just like, it's never beyond. I've been called Judas. I've been called all different types of things. It's, you know, and that's one one with the territory. I mean, and I think we don't seek after to be tried to be called any of these names. We just simply try to be Spirit-led individuals who are constantly putting up the light of Christ and understanding. And what I love about the passage is that Jesus says that I'm sending you as sheep in the midst of wolves. Now, if you really play out that metaphor, that a sheep in the midst of a wolf is what I call a dead sheep. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because sheep don't know how to protect themselves. They're dead unless that there's a shepherd around to protect them. And that's what I love about that verse, is that Jesus is saying, I am sending you as sheep in the midst of wolves. And we know throughout the book of Matthew that Jesus says, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need to understand is that we are going under the power and the authority and the care and watch of Jesus. So we don't have to fight for ourselves. We allow him to do the fighting for us, but we stay obedient to the call of reconciliation.
Yeah, because disciple making is just, it's not a casual suggestion, is it? It's what God calls us to do.
Amen.
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 Yeah, I like you a lot, Dahati, and your book, Among Wolves, Disciple Making in the City, is available right now for purchase. And if you still want to get in the drawing to win one of these books, we have a couple copies to send. And you can do that by calling us at 1-877-933-2484 or sending me an email, bill@myfaithradio.com. I love your passion, Dahati. Love to have you back on the show again.
Oh, I really appreciate it, Bill. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, and is it like 119 in Atlanta today?
It is very hot. I was wondering. I thought I was in another country for a minute. It is very hot.
Yeah, well, stay cool and have a great week.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Yep.
Appreciate it. God bless.
Yep, you bet. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a very short break and be back. Have a great day. You are lovable, you matter, and you belong. God loves you. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.